Emily Powers-Smith, our regular sexologist, joins us. And before we take a quick break and say hello to Emily, I do want to give you a word of warning that we are going to be talking quite graphically about sex, as we always do with Emily. But we're also talking about children and their approach to this, and young people and their approach to this subject. And we'll do it with some detail as well. So some of you may find it uncomfortable. Some of you may have kids around the place. So just to let you know, if that's not your thing, or if you feel this is going to be an awkward one for you, you might want to disappear for a few minutes. In the meantime, we'll take a quick break.
2FM. Jeopardy on 2FM. Text 51552.
Emily Powers-Smith there. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Nice to see you as always, Emily.
You too.
Now, it's been a while since we last spoke, and one of the things that happened in the news since our last chat was the spunout.ie website and advice that teens were getting on, how they were getting on having threesomes and doing all of that. It struck a chord with people. I don't know. It seemed
really
to get
an
enormous amount of attention. Why was that, do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to recognise that people are really, really worried about their children. And it all comes, it doesn't come from any sort of bad place, any of this debate. It's everybody who's involved wants the best for children and young people. So we have to acknowledge that, first of all. But I think it got a little bit out of hand. For as far as I could see, I was just coming back from holidays. I missed most of it actually happening, but I tried to catch up, and I felt that really the main point was being kind of brushed over, and everyone was focusing on one little article in a really, really great website that does a lot of good for people. And they did change it very quickly, change the wording to make it less, hey, everybody should have a threesome, because there was a slight tinge of that.
Of sensationalism.
Maybe. I mean, if you wanted to read into it that way, I think what they were doing was trying to give permission for children who find themselves being pressured to be able to talk about it. I think they were trying to take the shame out of it, so those who are affected by it could actually get some help rather than trying to encourage people to have it.
Okay.
But I think that the elephant in the room is porn. It's just kind of brushed over. Children, we have no comprehensive sex education in this country that's reliable, up to date, factual and non-judgmental. It does not exist. There are every now and again you hear of a wonderful school that does some really good work around this, but generally it isn't there. So what are we doing to provide our children with really up-to-date and factual and non-judgmental information that will counter what they are finding themselves on the internet?
Yeah, and you mentioned that the elephant in the room is porn. Mm. In what sense?
Well, because children are all children are curious. Mm-hmm. And we've got past the stage now where you can protect your child by just not talking to them about sex or being careful about what movies they go to see or that sort of thing. Children have phones. On their phones, they have the internet. On the internet, they can find porn for free. It's really easy to find. And they're curious. So they're looking at this stuff. There is very little you can do to protect your child from that. You can stop your child from having a phone. Their friend will have a phone. Their friend's older brother will have a phone. So what do? We have to be realistic. We can't stop that, but we have to balance it. We have to provide them with real factual information, self-esteem, an ability to differentiate between what's real and what's fake, so that when they see this stuff, they can go, okay, that's kind of gross, or it's kind of exciting, or it's funny, but it isn't actually what I plan to do with my body.
The same could be said about adults, incidentally. I mean, I spoke to one woman who was, before we met you, who was talking about this, saying that men's expectations of what women should do, and I don't know if it works the other way around,
it does,
has completely changed and has been skewed because of porn.
Exactly. It's permeating every part of our society. Look at how ads are now. Every ad now has a woman, a half-starved woman with her mouth open, looking like she's ready to accept God knows what at any point, half-dressed. Well, you could say that.
But that's what they do with the ice creams, isn't it?
That's what they do. You know, everything is advertised with sex. Everything has this kind of porn connotation to it. So we can't deny it, but we must talk about it and we must name it for our children as fake.
Yeah, and that's the point. What about this idea about sex education? Where do you think it's going wrong?
Well, I don't know that there's an awful lot of sex education, but teaching a child the reproductive system does not teach a child how to have boundaries, how to communicate their needs, how to say no or how to hear no. Mm-hmm. That's not... They should be put together. We're past the stage where, you know, they're children are being bombarded with all of this stuff, whether we like it or not. And as you say, adults are as well. And I work with adults who are dealing with all of this stuff. It creates sexual dysfunction as they get older. Isolation, anxiety, depression, all these things because of this pressure that begins when people are very, very small about how they should look. They feel objectified. Men objectify women. Children objectify each other. It's male and female are doing it to each other now. It's not just a one-way system. So I think we have to be realistic and we have to start teaching our children how to have listening skills, how to trust, that there's an adult who will listen to them without judging them and be that adult, which means we have to face our own shames and fears and guilts and worries. But we really have to allow children to tell us what they need as well, rather than dictating what we think. This is my job and I'm out of date with what children are needing and wanting because I can't keep up with the internet.
Yeah. I don't think I can think of any other country on the planet Earth that can cope with sex and that conversation in a worse way than Ireland.
Oh, there are. Yeah, no, there are.
Completely
shackled. Greece and Iceland are pretty shocking.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'd say we're there.
Oh, we're there.
Thereabouts.
You know, it's really interesting in America where, you know, they do the abstinence thing. That's what they teach. And the Christian right is very powerful in that. In the counties where that is most prevalent, that's where the highest porn searches are.
That doesn't surprise me.
Because if you shame everything to do with sex, then everything is off limits. So you're going to, children and young people are going to go looking for everything that's off limits. Mm. It's like, well, you're damned if you do, so you may as well do it all.
Yeah, rather than anything else. So
yeah.
You don't think that having the conversation, quote unquote, should just be having one conversation, though, because you reckon it should be something that goes on through a lifetime?
Yeah. I mean, studies are coming back now that show that the most efficient way to start educating your child is, you know, you can start at about the age of 2, believe, you know, which sounds crazy, but
to be sexually aware.
It's not sexual. Let's first of all clear up the difference between adult sexual and child sexual, because children are sexual beings in that they have genitals and they enjoy touching their own genitals. It feels good. That's it. There's no politics. There's no power play. They're not trying to get off with somebody or take advantage or have advantage taken. They have found a part of their body that feels nice to touch. It's pure. That's all it is. It's a play. It's self-soothing. There's nothing dirty. There's nothing wrong about that. So, but a child by the age of 2, maybe you may see your child touching themselves or rubbing. Children will often rub against pillows or cushions or blankets, hold a blanket between their legs or cross their legs and kind of jiggle around. This is all a little bit of self-stimulation. Now, you're at a point there where you can choose to shame the child, frighten the child, tell them that's dirty, tell them it'll hurt them, tell them they shouldn't do that till they're older and married, you know, whatever, bring in your own stuff about it. Or you can just normalise it and explain to them in very age-appropriate terms the difference between public and private, for example. Don't blame you for doing it, but there's places that you do that where it's, you know, where it's okay to do it, and places where you know, you can say something like, I do that, but you won't see me doing it because I do it privately, because it's a private thing. And children can understand that from a very young age, rather than shaming them.
I can't imagine a lot of people would be comfortable having that conversation with a child.
Listen, we have to get over our discomfort. We are proof of the pudding that being uncomfortable and ashamed of ourselves doesn't work.
Yeah.
I see people all the time. I'm in a generation, I'm in my 40s, I'm in a generation where people are ashamed of their genitals, they're ashamed of their bodies, they're ashamed to be sexual, they're ashamed to enjoy sex, they're ashamed they watch porn.
Where did the shame come from?
It comes from things like this. It comes
societal.
Another mistake we make is that we believe that if we don't talk to children about these things, they don't think about them. That's not true. They do think about them. They have bodies. They think about this stuff.
Yeah.
If you're not talking to them about it, they learn that it's a subject they can't talk about.
See, in Ireland, if you say the word, if you talk, even if when you use the word children, and then you talk about sex, and the next word is paedophile, because we're so
worried. And
we are so
worried.
As
I say, that comes from a really, that's a really good place to come from. We care, we worry, and we want to protect our children. But what we're doing isn't working. It's not working.
Okay, so you think it isn't something that we've gotten over, in that groups of, say, Irish women, to go older again, aren't often truthful to each other about their sex lives. Would that be the case as well?
I'm learning that. I was kind of surprised because I guess I was going along with the stereotype that girls talk about everything. You know,
boys don't talk about anything. On a girls' night out, do they talk about sex?
Well,
you might.
On a night out with me, they sure do.
Yeah.
But a lot of girls will say to me that I'm the only person they talk to about it.
Well, there you go. Here's, like, you know, if you talk to somebody who's a hairdresser, for example, the chances are if a hairdresser goes into a company, everyone asks them, listen, do you think I should get this done or should I get colour in? And what would you do to this, whatever it might be? In your case, do people quietly say to you, listen, while I have you, what is, after a few drinks, are they dying to talk about sex?
Yeah, they are. But they will talk to me about it. But usually, if it's something they actually want to ask, they will wait till I'm on my own with them. They won't make it a group conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have really good friends who are really open with me about their sex lives and they don't speak to each other about their sex lives. I find that kind of weird. I think everyone talks about sex because everyone talks to me about sex. So I have to keep remembering I'm in a bubble.
Because exactly. And beyond that bubble is a world where people are very private about sex. It's considered, for men, it's a macho boast thing.
And it's getting like that for women, I think.
For women, is it really?
It's the porn pressure, I think. Yeah, because women think they have to either be, you know, massively orgasmic and let on that sex is fabulous every time and they're some kind of goddess, you know, or they do this camaraderie thing with each other where they diss men and they diss sex and it's all about, oh, Jesus, it's going to be Friday, I'm going to have to. And that's really, both of those approaches are really unhealthy or unhelpful because they could actually say, you know what, I've been having sex recently and I'm not lubricating, it's really uncomfortable, what could I do? And somebody else might say, oh, that happened to me, you can get this really good lube. But they don't do that, they just suffer in silence. And
we're
men
mortified.
Suffer in silence.
People are mortified talking about
but
sex,
that's
they go
shame.
Red.
But that's shame. That's shame.
That is shame.
Shame stops you talking.
Yeah.
When the difference between, you know this, I'm sure, the difference between guilt and shame, guilt is when you feel bad about doing something, but shame is when you feel bad about yourself or something about you that is probably unchangeable.
Well, it's funny because as you're talking about, I'm thinking of the Michael Fassbender film, which I'm sure you must have seen, called
yes.
Shame. And it's funny that because that film is from top to bottom about sex and psychology. And in fact, it would put you off sex, funny enough, for that film. It was peculiar in that sense. But there's the name, shame, right there.
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about.
It's that thing. If you feel so ashamed about the most basic things like what your genitals look like or your own pleasure, it kind of, in a weird way, gives you license to go all out and do the most debauched things because it's all damned.
Yeah, yeah. Can you ask, what is an appropriate age to talk about sex to an 11-year-old girl? Books, websites, any help?
Well, I would say, there's a few things here, right, that are really, really important.
Sure.
First of all, I think you need to bring the subject up. Don't think your child will bring the subject up, because if you haven't brought it up so far, they've learned not to. So you do need to bring it up. And I would say, rather than make it into a big deal for you where it might be feeling a bit uncomfortable, start with a little question when you're out shopping or whatever. So are you interested in boys yet? How are you feeling? Are you noticing differences in your body? And normalise it like that and let her answer and then just leave it at that and ease her into it gently, because she's already getting to the age. Now, 11 is a good age. I would be a proponent of starting way younger, but 11 is way better than 13, and I'll tell you why in a minute. I would just ease into it gently and just open the dialogue up and start dropping in little things about your own body or your own periods or your own pubic hair or just little things, so that she starts to go, oh, this is an okay subject to talk about, before you launch into the conversation, which I think most people find very harrowing and difficult.
So it's a normalization of language of the body, as it were.
And using
then you
correct
move into
language.
Oh, so don't use makey uppy names
don't
for
do
body
that.
Parts
don't
and all
do
that.
It disempowers your child, because your child then goes to school or talks to their friends and they get tricked or they get teased or you know, because they're using a funny word, a wow-wow or a gigi or whatever, you know. If they're using the proper terminology also, they're able to they feel more empowered, because they're able to say, I have a pain in my vulva if they have a little infection or something, or my anus hurts, and rather than going, my boo-boo hurts, and you're going, what part of your boo-boo? And they're going, well, I only have one name and it's boo-boo, I don't know.
Yeah, so
it avoids
quitter with that.
Yeah, empowering our children.
51552, this woman talks so much sense, says Lucy, so that's a compliment for you. Obviously, we'd like to give you that. We had the talks as a text with our children over a year ago. They're aged 8 and 10.
Great.
Great. You'd be approving of that. Mm. Best thing we did, as the conversation goes on to this day.
Wonderful.
The level of comfort and confidence to talk
there
has been
go.
Amazing.
And that's what
that's
keeps...
That's good, isn't it?
And I want to just mention, you know, we're so worried, and rightly so, about protecting our children. This is how I think this is how you do it. This is what research is showing. You start at a young age. I think it's great to not separate the sex talk from everything else that you do in your parenting. So you can have wonderful parents who do great work with their child's self-esteem and their abilities to communicate. But if they don't link it to the body and the idea that the child has full right over their own body and full say over their own body and can set their own boundaries, children don't necessarily make that connection because what they're seeing is so opposite to that. So it's to connect these wonderful communication skills that you might be giving your child to being able to control what goes on with their own bodies and to be able to say yes or no. Another great way you can keep this education going is role play. Children often, you can talk to them about something and you can say, I think a lovely thing to tell a child is if an adult wants you to keep a secret from your parents, that's a warning sign. That's a good time to tell your parents.
Yeah, that's a very good piece of advice.
And then you're not going into anything too much. Yeah. Any secret. It may mean that you get your secret party ruined by your kid because she tells you because she knows she can't. She's not keep,
take
to keep
it.
Who cares?
Yeah, take the hit. My 14-year-old son, says a text, came to me recently and asked about porn and said he was curious about it on the internet. And I let him see a mild video, but it was clear to him that things like that were not real and purely make-believe. And I told him that's not what real people do in proper relationships.
Great.
I figured pretty quickly if I didn't let him see it and talk to him about it, he was going to do it anyway. He's a good kid and we have a good relationship, and I was glad he had the confidence to come to me and ask. I reckon I took the curiosity out of it for him and diffused what could have been an entirely different situation. He made me promise not to tell his mum, which I did.
Oh, that's wonderful. Isn't that wonderful?
Very mature take on the whole situation.
And that boy will be able to tell his friends.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. You know, it spreads this way that one child will be able to go, yeah, it's kind of funny and weird, but that isn't actually what we do. Because children are getting into, they're copying what they're seeing in porn, they're acting it out.
Yeah.
There's nothing about safe sex. There's nothing about consent. There's nothing about real enjoyment. It's just mechanical acting. And these children are traumatizing themselves and each other by enacting this stuff because nobody is telling them what's real and what they could really
do. No one's having a frank conversation. Ryan, I tried to discuss sex and periods with my 12-year-old daughter. I know she knows a lot from school education and peers. She hasn't reached puberty yet and refused to listen and went into a mood and told me to shut up.
What age was she?
She is 12.
So that's why I said 11 is okay, 13 is really difficult. Around that time,
yeah,
it's almost, you know, we've had some lovely stories of children of that age where it's worked really well, but you are setting yourself up to make it as difficult as possible. Children, 60% of little boys have found porn by the age of 10. Okay, let's just call it what it is.
Frightens. Okay? That would frighten me, actually.
Terrifies me.
Yeah.
So by the time a child is hitting puberty, and certainly into their teens, you are making it, that's about the most difficult age you can choose to have the talk with your child, because they're already mortified, the hormones racing, they've already found stuff out, they've already heard a whole load of nonsense, they don't think you know anything, they think you're stupid. I mean, I'm generalising here,
of course.
But you're much better off opening channels of conversation way younger and introducing it gently and allowing them to feel it's a two-way thing.
Well, here's a quick one. I'm a father of a 10-year-old boy. Is it too early to explain to him that masturbating is normal, or should I wait till he's older?
Oh, you could...
That's very young, is it?
No.
No.
Boys are masturbating in the womb.
Well, there's...
We have evidence of that now. Yeah.
I find that extraordinary.
Do you?
Well, you obviously have physical evidence of it, if you've seen.
But why would it be so... It feels good. Why would it be so extraordinary that a child would touch themselves where it feels good?
Yeah, no,
why
I just...
So weird?
Just
see, that's the I'm adult. Just, that's the adult.
Yeah, projecting.
Worrying.
Yeah, I worry about it. I just think that, you know...
If you even think about it, are you weird? Well, no.
Yeah.
You're just being... You know,
no, it's a fair point.
Pointing out to the reality. You know, so yes, so little boys are often... 10 is great. And he doesn't have to... Remember, again, he doesn't have to have the talk about it. He can just throw in a few questions or talk a little bit about penises generally and what they
Father
do and
son.
What they... without it being... And he can just do them for bite size, like 2 minutes, and then go off and play a bit of football, and then a week later bring it up again. He doesn't have to make it into a big scary topic.
My 8-year-old son watches TV with his hands down his shorts. Is this normal?
Yeah. Hey, I know not a many.
Yeah,
that.
Do that too. Okay, I have a 7-year-old, very curious boy who wants to know exactly how babies are made. I've always been open and honest. I never told him babies come out with a magic key. Is he too young to approach
key,
this?
I've never heard.
It's a good one. The stork has just gone out of job, out of business.
I don't think I have a magic key.
Is he too young to approach this? And is not how should we go? And if not, how should we go about it? 7.
Well, that's what age I was.
When what?
When I wanted to know.
And were you told?
My mum drew, she'd be mortified. My mum drew a picture in green marker on the sideboard in the kitchen, in the bathroom, of a man and a woman standing opposite each other. And the man's penis was as long as his leg and it was sticking straight across into the woman, I thought into her tummy button. But I thought that then I knew, I thought. So I told all my friends and then mum got phone calls saying, your child told our child that she had the conversation.
At 7.
It wasn't great. I mean,
was that traumatic for you at a 7-year-old to see that picture? You remember it so clearly.
See, I grew up in an animal shelter, so I was watching dogs mating all the time.
I'm sure you were surrounded by it.
I was.
Cats and dogs.
Yeah, but I didn't know that I didn't know that humans did it that way.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But it was made very clear. I was very lucky. I was brought up in a household where nakedness was normal.
Yeah.
I could go into the loo with my mum or my dad, you know, because I was little and they had to keep an eye on me or whatever. Nothing was ever. I was never shamed about my body.
Yeah.
And I did, and I saw animals having sex all the time, and I was told when I asked what was going on. So I was very lucky in that.
Yeah. We're going to leave it there.
Okay.
For today. But it's always, always, always good to talk to you, Emily. And thanks for coming in. You certainly tell it as it is. And that's, I suppose, part of what we're doing here is to remove the taboo of all of this. So thanks a million for your time, as always.
You're very welcome.
Emily
Powersmith. Thank you. 2FM.